Recorded live high atop the Patti Smythe Building in beautiful Midtown Portsmouth, Virginia, it's Phantasmo After Dark with your host, Rob Floyd, and co-host, Craig Eckridge. Tonight's topic, The Warriors. Well, welcome back to the old podcast, everybody. Hey, Craig.
Hey, Rob.
Thanks for stopping by.
Pleasure. It's been a minute.
Yeah, man. Always good to have some company in the lounge. Yeah.
Always good to be in the lounge, and if there's any movie that we're going to get together and talk about, this is going to be the one.
Oh, this is a long time coming. Yeah.
It really has been. It really has been.
And I think we're just going to jump right into it. I don't have any anything to promote. No upcoming events now that Halloween is over, so it's going to be quiet for a while.
Well, there's next Halloween.
No, I need a little rest before that. Oh, man, I don't even want to think about next Halloween yet. But we'll just jump right into this, man, because this is a movie we both love. It is one of the, top 10 most favorite movies of mine.
Easily.
And, man, you know, it was such a good movie. So many things to talk about. I don't even know where to begin. I mean,
Start at the beginning. Originally a book from 1965.
Was it really that long? Oh, I didn't know the book was that long ago.
65, I believe. By Saul Urich, then eventually it made its way through the Hollywood process and was turned into a film we all know and love.
Yeah.
But apparently, the book is an adaptation from a story from 400 BC about 10,000 Greek soldiers who were in Persia for some reason.
Oh, and so that explains the director's cut with all that.
Director's cut with all that. And their leader got killed, and they had to fight their way back to Greece.
Oh, okay, cool.
So, and if you listen to... what is it? Joe Bob Briggs did The Warriors one night, and he's a ton of information where I got a lot of this stuff from.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, Cyrus is a Greek name, and it was one of the leaders.
Yeah.
Cleon is a Greek name. Ajax.
Yeah.
So it's basically an adaptation of a history.
That's pretty awesome.
It was 300 before 300.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
300 is a remake of The Warriors.
That's right. That's right.
But not near as damn good.
No, not at all.
Real quick, though, anybody who hasn't seen The Warriors.
First of all, how are you here?
Yeah. Why are you even listening to this? No. The Warriors is this fantastic movie from the early, the late 70s. Late 70s, late 70s. About a street gang in New York from Coney Island that goes to this big gang meeting where this leader, Cyrus, the leader of the biggest gang in New York, is trying to organize all the gangs to work together to take over the city. And if something goes awry at the meeting, and the Warriors have to fight their way back to Coney Island over the course of the night. And, you know, they try to ride the subway, get stopped. They have to get off and run and try to get to the next stop and fight different gangs throughout the night. And it's really, it sounds like a real simple plot, but it's really a great movie. And by the end of the movie, you kind of feel like you've gone through the whole night with them. Shot incredibly well. I was watching some interviews with the director and the cinematographer, Andrew Laszlo, and some of the stuff. Man, I mean, that cat's worked on everything. And no wonder I love The Warriors so much, because he's worked on a lot of other movies that I really loved. Funhouse, he did. A couple of the Star Trek movies, I think. Oh, geez, what else did he work on? Oh, Remo Williams. You know, there's quite a few things he worked on. You can look at the list on IMDb. He's done a ton of stuff. But some of the things he talked about in this, the way New York, you know, they said it's famous for, you know, instant downpours and just rain out of nowhere coming and going. Mm-hmm. Especially, you know, back then. Because the director wanted to use locations in New York, real locations and no sets, which they only actually used one set. They only built one set, and that was the big bathroom fight. We'll get to that in a little bit. You can't light but so much on location outdoors. So one thing they did, and the whole thing is pretty much takes place at night. So what they did, they simulated, you know, they did one rain scene with them running in the rain to show that it downpours. And that way that gave them license to wet down the streets in every shot after that. Because they established it had rained, you know. And so you got puddles and pools of water and glistening pavement reflecting the lights they used back up. So it gave them more light. And it's just simple.
Oh, cool.
Incredibly simple thing, but genius.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, who else would have thought of that? Except, you know, it really helped them out a lot. And then some of the other places where they placed lights, like the scene where they're chasing the baseball Furies are chasing them in the park.
Central Park, yeah.
Yeah, you know, there's only so many lights there. And you can't just put lights anywhere. But that's kind of what he did. He got cheap clip lights from the hardware store and put them in the trees. And you can see them in the shots, but you don't really notice them because it's like the street light. Oh, there's no light shining through the trees, you know, kind of thing.
Exactly.
And you're focused on the action that's going on. But it really worked. Just fantastic. Technical stuff like that, you don't think about watching this cool gang action movie.
You know? Yeah, and of course, you know, the director, Walter Hill. With Hollywood bona fides, this wasn't some, you know, hack director they gave
this
little gang picture to or anything like this. This was a talent. This was a legit talent.
Yeah, and you know, after that, he went on to, like, Streets of Fire, which is a really kind of...
It's thematically similar.
Yeah, thematically similar, but it's a stylized, artsy kind of fantasy, but it's not a fantasy at all. If you've never seen Streets of Fire, don't think it's a fantasy. But it's a very strange movie,
mm-hmm.
but really cool at the same time.
Yeah.
But The Warriors, man.
The difference between Streets of Fire and The Warriors, one of the things, just to not get too far on a sidetrack, if you look at Streets of Fire, you'll have modern day music and fashions right next to guys with pompadours out of the 50, and the cops have the big raincoats and their revolvers.
Yeah, it like took place in time.
Yeah, you can't tell when it took place. But The Warriors is, you can look at that and tell that's 1970s New York. There's no way around that.
Oh, yeah.
There's no way around it.
And it's like the city itself is a character in the film.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
And well, I'm talking about characters. Okay, let's talk about the cast. Virtually unknowns, and still kind of, not major players, not even really B players, some of them. A few of them made a name. Chief with James Remar.
Yes.
Who's been in every goddamn thing.
Mm-hmm.
From Sex and the City to...
Dexter.
One of the Mortal Kombat to Dexter. Yeah. Been in tons of stuff, usually playing a bad guy,
mm-hmm.
but he's progressed to playing kind of as he's gotten older, playing kind of a good guy in Dexter, the father figure, you know. You know, great. I mean, a good actor, you hate him when he's a bad guy, or you believe that he's the bad guy, you know.
Yeah.
And in this, he's the Warriors, he's the tough asshole guy. The hothead asshole who wants to fight at any turn. But you end up feeling bad for him when he gets caught, when the cops get him.
Eh, not really, because he's kind of a jerk.
Well, yeah, he's
kind of a jerk, but he's the one, he just wants to soldier through and show everybody who the Warriors are and make their mark. And
Well, I mean, you feel bad for him because he's one of the Warriors and he got caught. And because, you know, he's the guy that, he's the asshole, but you know he's going to have your back in a fight.
Absolutely.
You know, that kind of guy. He's a good guy to have for that. But he doesn't make it to the end. He doesn't die, though, but he doesn't make it to the end. Now, the other Warriors, the only other one, well, I'll take that back. A couple of them have done other things that I've seen. We were talking earlier that the Fox was in The Thing.
Yes.
Carpenter's The Thing. And the guy, Rembrandt, the younger guy who does the spray paints, tags the stuff for the Warriors, he was in, he was in a kid's show.
I was going to get to this.
What was that? Go ahead, lay
it
on me.
He was in 3-2-1 Contact.
That's it. That's it.
He was one of the Bloodhound gang in their little episodic detective show that they would show on 3-2-1 Contact. Oddly enough, there's another tie to 3-2-1 Contact in The Warriors.
And was that...
It's the girl selling the candy that Luther throws the candy bar at.
Really?
She played Trini on 3-2-1 Contact, and I will always remember that. Because I was about 7 years old and she was my first TV crush.
Wow.
So, 3-2-1 Contact apparently recruited from street gangs, from what I'm led to believe.
Well, you know, they get older, they get out of the gang, they got to look for work, you know, grow up a little bit.
It's called community service, I guess. That's how they worked it off.
Man.
And then, of course, segueing into Luther.
Oh, well, Luther.
Very few people know him as Luther, but I guarantee you everybody will recognize him as Solly.
Solly,
the one who Arnie wants to kill
David
last.
David Patrick Kelly, Yeah, he's going to kill him last. Well, and also, another time he was Luther was in 48 Hours. He's the guy that Nick Nolte chases down the stairs. Eddie Murphy opens the door, and he flips over the door, and he goes, "Oh, I'm sorry, Luther. Did that hurt? It looked very painful." That was David Patrick Kelly.
Wasn't James Remar the main bad guy?
That's right. James Remar was
in
was,
48 Hours, too. Or Beverly Hills Cop.
No. It was
48 hours.
It was 48 hours, I think. Because it was Billy, from Predator,
mm-hmm.
and James Remar, I believe.
Now, so, and I believe that was another Walter Hill movie.
Gans.
There you go.
He was there Gans. Yeah. So, well, there you go. Walter Hill takes care of his people.
That's right.
And two others that stand out. Well, no, I'll say three others that stand out. Deborah Van Valkenburg, who was Mercy, went on to wasn't too close for comfort, and where she hung out with Ted Knight
and Streets of Fire. And she was in Streets of Fire.
Was she in Streets of Fire?
I believe so.
Where?
I thought she was.
No, because you had Diane Lane.
Okay.
What's her name? She this goes by initials.
Okay.
She was in Devil's Rejects.
PJ Souls.
No. PJ Souls. Shorter.
I don't know. Anyway, we'll edit this out. Chick. This isn't going anywhere.
Yeah.
We'll fix it in post.
We'll fix it in post. Yeah. And then they had the other chick that was hanging out with Michael Paré, the army chick, the driver. I don't think Van Valkenburg was in that.
I thought she was Diane Lane's sister.
She could have been. It's been a long time since I've seen that. So she might have been. She was, speaking of being sisters, she was also, what's her name? Lois Lane.
Margot Kidder?
No. TV show.
Terry Hatcher.
Terry Hatcher. She was Terry Hatcher's sister in Brain Smasher, A Love Story.
She was, yes.
With Andrew Dice Clay.
We are not ninjas.
That's right. But then we come to, oh no, I'm sorry, I keep jumping ahead. We got Lynn Thigpen.
Oh yes.
You know, the DJ.
Oh yeah.
You only see her from like, you know, her nose down, or right under her nose, her mouth is all you really see. She has a very distinctive, you know, mouth. And that smooth DJ voice, you know, who was also in a kid's show.
I want to say it was Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego?
She was the chief. Yeah, the chief of that. And also,
I could not separate the two of us. You know, all right, Carmen, I see you bopping down to Belize.
Well, I get it's over, Carmen. I guess all we can do is play you a song.
You're good, Carmen. You're real good. I could never separate that out, so I'd be over my nephew's house or niece's house watching it, and I'd start laughing. Like, what do you? I'm like, oh, you wouldn't get it.
She was also in Godspell.
Was she?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, running around and singing with that with everybody. Of course, and then that brings us to Michael Beck.
Yeah, well, yes.
The Michael Beck. Perfect man for the role of Swan, you know? Good-looking guy, character level-headed, but takes care of business. And Michael Beck, man, can't talk about Michael Beck without talking about Xanadu.
I thought you were going to say Megaforce.
We got to talk about that too then.
Okay.
But Xanadu, man, I love that movie. Phyllis, I love that movie. So cheesy, so much fun. Michael Beck, Gene Kelly, Olivia Newton-John, done.
I don't think I've ever made it all the way through that movie.
It's a great cheesy musical, 70s musical fantasy.
See, folks, we cover the whole spectrum of opinions here
do.
On this show.
Yes, we do. It's so much fun, but we'll leave it at that on that. Megaforce, Michael Beck, a small part in Megaforce, though.
Mm-hmm.
Real small part, but had a bit deep southern accent in that, didn't he?
He did.
Yeah.
He did.
And then he was in, what was it? That movie, that TV show. With Michael Paré. Remember that? They were cops. Michael Paré was a New York cop, and Michael Beck was a Southern cop.
I do not
from
remember
Texas
that.
Or something. It was something Knights. Southern Knights or something like that. I can't remember.
I'm not familiar with that
at
all.
But he was in New York with him, I think. Didn't last long.
Much like the careers of Michael Beck and Michael Paré, unfortunately. But those two guys, they always get mentioned together because their career started out white hot and you thought they were going places and they could just never seem
to. And they're fun guys to watch on the screen, too.
Oh, yeah.
They're charismatic, both of them.
Oh, very much so.
You know, and they've both been in movies and shows that I really like.
Sure.
So, you know, who knows? Who knows why they
didn't take off. That the mainstream never quite clicked with them.
Yeah, it's a damn shame, too.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I could have gone up to Chiller a couple weekends ago, Halloween weekend. Michael Beck, James Remar, mm-hmm. and Deborah Van Valkenburg were there.
Oh, yeah.
How awesome would that have been?
That would have been awesome.
Man.
And then didn't they do a thing that had pictures online where a year or two ago, all the remaining Warriors like recreated the subway ride?
Oh, yeah. And a big Warriors convention. Yeah, the last ride. Look for pictures of that online, man.
And there's also...
Awesome.
There's clips where they actually like run into real street gangs and are like, you guys are the Warriors.
Yeah.
And they're, you inspired us, which is, I guess, a dubious honor, but
yeah,
these, you can tell it's these, you know, rough, tough, big dudes.
Who, yeah.
Like, they're like little kids again. They're like, you're the Warriors. You're the real Warriors.
You guys are the real guys.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, man, that, you see pictures from that, convention.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't just the Warriors that were there. There were all the other people in the film that I guess it could make it. I mean, there was a couple guys from The Orphans were there.
Mm-hmm.
Deborah Van Valkenburg showed up. Mm-hmm. You know, Mercy. The guy in the coveralls and the roller skates.
Yeah.
He was there. I can't remember. What gang were they?
They were the...
I can't remember. But anyway.
Were they the Van Cortlandt Rangers?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think they were like, it's just something like the Boppers, just something generic like that.
I think they say it in the movie.
Anyway. But the Baseball Furies was there, and the lead Fury was there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The one everybody knows.
Yeah, and he can still do that move with the bat thing.
That's right.
And then people dressed up as all the other gang. Oh, even some of the Lizzies were there.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. Still looking good, too. But it's amazing. I would have loved to have gone to that convention. And it was at Coney.
Oh, yeah.
Where they held it. So, you know, where else are you going to hold it? But the pictures online from that are just incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Michael Beck was in another movie. I think it was a TV movie with Mako.
Oh, wow.
Called The Last Ninja.
Oh, my.
I've only seen the last couple of minutes of it.
Mm-hmm.
My mom saw it years ago and told me how good it was. And it's one of those things I've been wanting to see, but I never have really sought out, you know. And now I'm going to have to. But it starts out a little kid, a little blonde-haired kid somehow. I don't remember when, where it takes place, if it's in the States or Japan or whatever like that, but he's left on the doorstep of this Japanese family. And the father of the family, they take him in and raise him as their own, and he teaches the kid, the family, you know, their martial art and ninjutsu. But nobody knows, you know, nobody knows that they know any martial arts whatsoever. It's hit like, you know, ninjas would be. And I can't remember, like I said, I never saw the movie. I did see something at the very end. I guess he's off doing something, and a cop is trying to, you know, is looking at him through binoculars, and he's like on his balcony talking on a phone, and he walks in, you know, and when he gets inside, he shuts the door, and then you see like him like pull the mask off, and it's his sister wearing a mask of him he comes in like in his ninja outfit and sounds stupid, sounds cheesy, but it's supposed to be a pretty good action movie. I guess it had to been 80s. When the ninja craze was going on.
Yeah.
And so that's one to look for. The Last Ninja, Michael Beck. And Mako, or Mako, if you will, who is always a joy to see on the screen.
And then the other thing I love about the movie is there's homages and cultural stuff that has bled out, which was that terrible, horrible Batman and Robin movie, the Joel Schumacher one where they're in the alley and there's a baseball gang. And I'm looking in the theater.
Wow.
I'm like, that's the Baseball Furies. what are they trying to pull here? Do you think no one's ever seen the Warriors Joel Schumacher Jacques? Well, and it's like a Day-Glow version of it. It's really bad, but it's, I think the first one with Alicia Silverstone and she's going through the alley and
it's awful.
Chris O'Donnell.
I blocked so much of that movie.
Does his, but there's a scene like right out of the Baseball Furies.
Okay, I'm still not going to go back and watch it, but I'll just take your word on that.
I just want to let you know it was there.
Thank you.
And then in 2005, Rockstar Video Games, that gave us Grand Theft Auto and Red Dead Redemption, did a Warriors video game.
Oh, yeah.
Which is...
You got that, don't you?
Don't even think I'm going to answer that question, sir.
I need to see that. I just want to watch the in-between play things.
It's really fascinating because you start as a new member.
Yeah.
And you have to fight some bums to actually get into the gang.
Yeah.
And then once you're into the gang, you run some missions, but it starts before the movie, and it runs through at the end credits is the end fight on the beach.
That's awesome.
And it goes in a little more backstory. It's apparently the Rogues actually killed a police officer, and the gun that Luther uses is that cop's gun. That's where he got it from.
Wow.
But then there's more involved. There's the fight with the Furies, but it's bigger, and there's like a giant Fury with three baseball bats tied together you have to fight. And then you fight the Hi-Hats, and they're in like an old abandoned amusement park, and you're going through the horror tunnel and all.
Wow.
And their leader is some big giant fat guy.
Okay.
And instead of all face paint, he's got like John Wayne Gacy clown makeup on.
Look, next time you come in town and we don't have anything else going on, you bring your game system. You bring that game.
I
want to watch it. I just want to watch it.
Stuff.
That's all.
You mug people. You steal car stereos. And there's one of the missions. It's probably one of the hardest ones. Is you're in a tagging competition, and you have to get the Warriors logo spray painted.
Oh yeah.
But there's also other gangs doing the same thing. So in the middle of spray paint, and you have to disrupt the other gangs. But then you run out of spray paint, so you have to take paint from them, and then you have to go finish yours, and at the same time, they're trying to disrupt you from doing your logo, and it's a lot of fun.
Man.
And then it's like the other warriors get busted and you have to practice, like, you know, uncuffing them and everything. So it's really deep. It goes into the mythology. And if I remember correctly, it's sound clips from the movie. Yeah. It's the actual actors.
That's awesome.
That they got. And in the beginning, you start with the Wonder Wheel.
Yeah.
And
of course.
And the street map. It's just a great game to play.
Man.
Great game to play.
You know, and talking about, you know, the things in the Warriors just stand out, like the Wonder Wheel. That every time I see that in any other movie, anything else, the first thing I think of is the Warriors. The second thing I think of is Remo.
Of course.
Both Walter Hill. Not Walter Hill, both Andrew Laszlo.
There
so
you go.
So there's a connection there, you know. But it's such an iconic piece,
mm-hmm.
piece of, you know, Coney in New York. But I don't think Coney at first. I don't think New York. First thing I think is the Warriors.
That's right.
And then Coney.
And there you go.
Are you talking about things that have bled out into mm-hmm. pop culture and all? The most iconic thing that has come out of the Warriors, everybody knows, even if they haven't seen the movie, they heard it, is...
Oh, yes. Yes.
Warriors! The bottles clink in and Luther is saying, come out and play!
That always reminds me of when you talk about Goodfellas, someone goes to, you know, I'm funny like a clown. It's like, come on, go deeper. Impress me.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the chicks are packed. Pull out something like that.
Yeah. But how many, you know, how many people have you sampled that and used that in different things?
Oh my God! Oh,
Twisted Sister, you know, was the first little thing that comes to mind. But it's cool that it's, you know, it's such an iconic, goofy thing, and it was ad-libbed basically. Mm-hmm. It was just thought up on the fly. Walter Hill, and you know this, I'm sure, with David Patrick Kelly and Walter Hill, they were trying. He wanted something a little more than them, the car just sitting there and them, you know, staring each other down. And so he told David Patrick Kelly, taunt them, do something. I don't care if you sing, I don't care if you scream, yell, just something, taunt the Warriors a little bit. So before they got the scene, Patrick Kelly went running under the boardwalk and grabbed three or four little beer bottles. And he just started doing it, you know, doing the clink, 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 mm-hmm. and came that taunting thing. And he said that it comes from, he used to have a neighbor when he lived in the apartment building in New York that would taunt him.
Yeah.
And it was kind of scary. He would say, David, come out and play, David, like that.
Yeah.
He said the guy was really scary. So he just used that. And it keeps going. And the sound guy, one of the editors said they actually looped the clinking to make it go on longer, to make it, you know, more suspense, more creepy kind of. And it's brilliant. I mean, it's cool how things come about on the fly like that, mm-hmm. you know. And I really love stuff like that. You know, like when I'm working on a project with somebody, whether it be in, you know, film stuff like we did,
mm-hmm.
or music or whatever. You never know where it's going to go. And some of the stuff that comes up as an accident just makes it so much better.
Oh yeah.
Than what was originally thought of. And like in the Warriors, a couple of other things that happened. The whole Swan-Mercy relationship wasn't part of the story to begin with. It's not in the book. Fox and Mercy were supposed to get together. But watch an interview with Michael Beck. He was saying that, I guess they filmed this linear and not mm-hmm. like they do a lot of movies
where
you're going to just film when you can, scenes out of order. But they said the chemistry that he and Mercy had, or he and Von Valkenburg had on screen, it just was working. And Fox and Mercy just didn't have, you know, weren't clicking. So they, on the fly, they kind of wrote them a few scenes,
yeah.
you know, so where they get together and their relationship kind of mm-hmm. starts to work. And it worked out for the best.
Yeah,
of course,
I think. It worked out very well.
But Fox had to get it so they could get separated,
yeah.
you know. And that kind of sucks for it sucks for the actor because he didn't get to make it to the end of the movie.
Yeah.
But his character was cool, though. He was mm-hmm. he was the super level-headed one of the group. The guy who knew a lot of stuff and was just casual about it, you mm-hmm. know. He was the brains, pretty much, of the outfit. And Swan was the tactician, the strategy guy, mm-hmm. you know. And, of course, Ajax was the muscle.
Yeah.
Let's see, what else? There was a couple other things that they kind of did. Oh, well, the whole beginning was a reshoot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm guessing at some point we should actually talk about the movie and put some of this in context.
Well, I gave him a quick rundown. The biggest thing about these podcasts, I always say, and I'll say it at the end again, is watch the movie.
Without question.
I'm not gonna. The first couple podcasts, I think what we did is we did run through the plot completely,
yeah.
and that takes a lot of time. And if you've seen the movie, you know the plot already. And if you haven't, hopefully the stuff we say will intrigue you enough to go see the movie.
Oh, yeah.
To find out what the hell are they talking about.
Oh, yeah.
But definitely watch this movie. I can't say it enough how good a film this is and how much I enjoy it. Back to the whole beginning, though, because you've seen the TV version, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Where it has the original beginning, they edited out. And to put this into context for anybody that's listening here, the film takes place at night. The whole thing is at night until the very end where they make it back to Coney. Oh, spoilers. And it's daybreak. Originally, they had shot a scene with Cleon during the day at, you know, on the boardwalk at Coney, talking to his girlfriend about what was going on and where they were going, and then talking to the rest of the warriors and going down the line, like, and pretty much naming them, because you get some of their names in the movie and some of them you don't get.
Yeah.
But you hear them like talking, say the guy's name and like where they're running. So some of them you don't make out, but he goes down the list and introduces each one of them to the audience, basically, and says why they were picked. And it's not a bad little scene, and I kind of like it because it's one, when I first saw it on TV, I was like, what the hell is this? I've never seen this before, you know? But the decision not to use that, because the movie takes place at night, and that scene kind of is a slow burn to set it up, and then all of a sudden it's night and it starts. I like the way it actually came theatrically, where it starts, you just get the Wonder Wheel lights up and you get that music and it's nighttime. And then it's got those just insert shots of each one, you know, one of the warriors talking to one of the other ones.
Yeah.
And then the subway, them getting on the subway and the subway map, the subway moving, you know, and another, a couple other shots of them, you know, just like a question and an answer and then back to the subway shot and them horsing around until the end of the theme. And then the last, yeah, I bet nobody's even going to be there. Yeah. And boom, it opens up on that big conclave of every gang in New York.
And as they're doing that, too, though, you're getting the insert shots of the other gangs going, too.
Yeah, so you're getting introduced,
kind of. They're building the universe.
Yeah.
They're building the universe of, you know, what's in store for these guys. And I've often wondered if the Warriors kind of set the template for the 80s canon movie gangs, the interracial with the crazy outfits.
And, well, speaking of that, do you remember a TV show? It only lasted maybe a season.
Did it have Renegades or
the
something?
The Renegades.
Yes, I remember the Renegades.
With? Who was the lead?
Patrick Swayze.
He was Swan, basically.
Yes, he was Swan.
And Brian Tochi was Dragon. He was for the Asian gang.
Because, of course, he was.
Yeah, and shit, what's her name? She was on Babylon 5. She was the female commander, the last one. She was on Lois and Clark. Anyway.
Terry Hatcher?
No, not Terry Hatcher. Blonde. Anyway, she was real young. She was the chick from, I think it was her. Anyway, but they had, you know, it was a racially diverse group of one person from each gang in the city, and they had a cop who I think was Red Foreman.
I think you're right.
You know, basically it was Jump Street before Jump Street.
Yeah.
But they had a gang member from each gang in the city working together with the cops to take out crime in the city, you know. And of course the Warriors inspired that. I mean, how could you say it didn't, you know?
But then, you know, you're getting your gangs and you see, okay, here's one wearing all black muscle shirts, okay. And then here's one wearing all yellow silk jackets, the Electric Eliminator.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay.
And then the gangs with the coveralls.
And then the gang of mimes.
The mimes.
I'm like, okay, so, and they're the hi-hats. So you're like, okay, vicious.
Now I like the pimps. I don't, that might not have been their name, but that's what I called them, with the pink,
purple
shiny vest.
Yes, the purple
and like
shiny
vest. The Panama hats. And
that's
stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
I was like, the two least threatening gangs, the ones with the army jackets and the black pants, the like rolled up like capris and those weird like stocking caps.
Mm-hmm.
No. Just no. And then the cats with the Hawaiian shirts and the straw hats, the Panama hats with the boombox. Those guys are like, what are you guys going to the beach?
That's right. That's right.
They're the vacationers. That was their name.
That's right. From the most magical place on earth. And then, so they get there and you pan out on, and it's an impressive lineup. It's hundreds of extras.
Oh, it is. Yeah. It had to have been a nightmare to, you know, logistically to coordinate that scene.
And then you get Cyrus doing his speech.
Yeah.
And that's another one of the things that, you know, is kind of bled into pop culture.
Oh, yeah.
When you get his big pronouncement, he's giving the speech and laying out numbers, you know, and this gang's next to this gang and nobody's wasting each other and it's a miracle.
And then what does he say?
And then he gets the, can you dig it, suckers? So to this day, if I'm ever somewhere and there's a podium, I get behind the podium and I throw out the arms and I drop one of those and every once in a while someone will smile, but for the most part people look at me and I'm like,
you can't dig it, can you?
I'm like, you all are suckers.
Y'all are all the orphans.
That's right. You're the orphans. You're the orphans. So they get to it, and then, you know, as you were mentioning the Baseball Furies earlier, which is oddly enough
everybody's favorite gang in the movie. Just
but if you think about it, the Baseball Furies are kind of like the Boba Fett of the Warriors.
Yeah. Because
everybody knows them and everybody thinks they're badasses and they do absolutely zero. The roller skate gang and the Lizzies cause more damage than the Baseball Furies did.
That's true.
It's like everybody thinks, oh, it's the Baseball Furies, it's Boba Fett. Boba Fett fell into the Sarlacc pit. That's about it.
Yeah, he fell and he couldn't get up.
Yes, he fell and he couldn't get up. The Baseball Furies look badass, and they come out with their, I believe he said they coordinated that fight like a samurai movie with the stances and the way they move the bat and all, and they just get folded up.
Yeah.
And they get their backs taken, and they lay there all in their shame.
Yeah.
So they're like the Boba Fett of the Warriors. Everybody knows them, and everybody calls them badasses, but they do absolutely zip.
That's
to
true,
impede the heroes.
That's true. The only ones that do less are the orphans.
That's a good point.
You know,
that's a good point. Yeah.
But yeah, no, I go with that. The Boba Fett. Yeah, I'll go with that. That's good. But they had the most iconic look.
Oh yeah, if you think of the Warriors,
you're thinking Baseball
Furies. You're thinking the Baseball Furies.
You know. Oh yeah. Man, you know, so much going on in that movie.
And there's a fan site. I hope it's still up. I haven't looked at it in years. There's actually like a list of 150 names of gangs they want. It's like the Xylophones and just all sorts of weird names.
Xylophone.
I mean, it was a list.
Ring!
They all had jackets like Lenny from Sha Na Na with xylophones on the sleeves, I guess. I don't know. But there's a list, and it's like, okay, you see the Electric Lemonaders and Moon Runners, and it's like, I wanted to see the Xylophones or the this or the that or the
Cortland Rangers.
That's right. There you go.
Yeah, you know, the movie, it's a very stylized version of 70s gangs. Not having been in the New York in the 70s and of that age, I can't honestly say, you know, what it was like, but you know it is very stylized. I wonder, you know, I'd like to talk to somebody who was a teenager back then, who was maybe in gangs back then, to see, you know, how close similarities were in some, you know, some aspect.
But apparently there was the production ran afoul of a real street gang.
Oh, a couple of times.
Because when they drew the Warriors tag, it was actually over a legit gang tag. So Walter Hill's like, we're sorry. Hey, you guys want to be in a movie? So some of the extras are legit street gang members of that era.
Well, that wasn't that, it was the Coney gang, and weren't they called like the second base?
I don't remember.
I think that's what I read. I could be wrong, but I think I read that. So they were called the second base. That was the name of the gang. And they give them a little nod. Lynn Thigpen, in one of her lines, says, all right, Boppa's the Warriors made it past second base. Yeah, okay, something like that. And they love that. You know, they said her name. So, you know, that was cool. Yeah, but a lot of other, there was another incident I heard about where they were all having lunch and a representative from one of the gangs came in. Of course, the movie had a legal liaison guy, a social worker between the gangs and them. One of the representatives came in and said, hey, you know, you ought to hire us to watch your stuff. And Liaison went to the producer and said, you should pay him. Because if not, they were going to wreck all their equipment and stuff. So they, after a while, they had somebody watching their stuff.
Yeah. And then, of course, that segues into the, at this point, I don't even know if it's urban legend or if it was ever legit or not, that they wanted to remake the Warriors and use real gangs, Bloods, and Crips, and Bikers.
There's been talking about that recently.
You know, I'm suspecting that shoot lasts about one day, and then the project's over with.
Well, you know, that's one of those things. Even if they didn't use real street gangs or whatever, the idea of trying to remake the Warriors or updating it today, no way in hell. That's one of those movies that is just such a product of its time.
Oh, yeah.
That to even, it would only, the name would be the only thing remotely similar to the, I mean, because you just couldn't, it just wouldn't work. You know, it would not work. I mean, you could adapt the story like they did from the Greek legend, but you couldn't call it the Warriors, and you couldn't use street gangs and that use that same kind of plot. The one, technology's so much far ahead than it was in the 70s, you know, with cell phones and everything like that, and transportation is so much different, and gangs just not even like any like that at all anymore. You know, even yeah. if they were like that. And society's attitudes and everything are completely different. It just would not work. And that's the charm of it, is the time it is set in is what really makes it.
True. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like a lot of movies. I mean, I've always said that about Rocky Horror too. It's such a product of its time in the 70s when it was made. To try to update it would be ridiculous. The only thing that Fox special did a little while ago where they just showed, you know, they did a, people always say, a reboot, a remake of Rocky Horror. It wasn't a reboot or a remake. They just did it. Like, the play has been done over and over and over again. It's just another version of the same story. They didn't update it. They just recast it with different people. And that's the only thing that saved it from being a complete mess. It wasn't good, but it was, some of it was tolerable, and they had some good ideas. But the Warriors, there's just no way, no way in hell you could do that in this today, in 2000.
Well, look what they did with Assault on Precinct 13. It went from, again, a gang picture. Now, all of a sudden, it's a gang of corrupt cops trying to get a witness.
Oh, see, I didn't even watch that remake. I couldn't bring myself
it
to watch
it. It was on at a friend's house, and they were watching it, you know, and I couldn't really turn the channel. So, instead of going from, you know, very much a product of its time,
yeah.
same era, same
yeah.
kind of thing, uh-huh. it was, you know, a gang coming to get somebody. It was Lawrence Fishburne is this criminal mastermind, and he's arrested, and he's going to squeal on like some corrupt cops, so they aggress the police. Totally different story. They're just cashing in on the name.
No thanks.
So, exactly.
No thanks.
Exactly. And to really illustrate
yeah.
the difference in times,
yeah.
apparently the Hells Angels, the real legit Hells Angels,
yeah.
sued the Warriors because they said that their logo was so close to the Hells Angels' actual logo.
Oh, really?
There was a court battle over it. And
wow.
I don't remember what the settlement was. So you can't really, I don't think, make a movie about warring street gangs trying to fight each other when you have a legit biker gang sending lawyers after a fake street gang for copyright infringement.
Wow.
If that doesn't illustrate the change in times, I don't know what does.
That's weird, man.
So, yeah, that actually happened.
Wow. Yeah, but going back to the pop culture and stuff,
mm-hmm.
well, when it came out, it was a hit. But then there was like violence in theaters and stuff with gangs, from what I understand. So it kind of got pulled.
Yeah.
It didn't play as long as it could. It was on the road to being a big, big hit. But since then, it's developed a huge cult following. And it's gotten more popular over the years. Because I remember I saw it as a late show when I was mm-hmm. in high school at the Narrow. And I'd seen it on TV one time or a couple times and loved it. And I got to see it in a theater and went nuts. But not that many people, it seemed, knew about it. But now it's like, you know, you look at that. Well, you look at that convention. You know, thousands of people showed up for that thing. And a lot, you know, a lot of people, everybody knows the, you know, Warriors.
Yeah. And that's when I was telling some of my friends at work,
yeah.
you know, I like the movie and all. That's what they all go to.
Yeah.
Can tell you nothing else about the movie,
no.
but they know that.
Yeah.
And the weird thing that I was thinking is I was just sitting here. And I think I saw it on TV the first time. It's weird because I always remember loving this movie,
yeah.
but I don't remember how I got introduced to it.
I don't remember. I cannot tell you the first time I saw it, but I'm sure it was on TV. And then I got a VHS copy of it I had for years. I got somewhere. And, of course, I saw it as a late show. But I would watch that VHS copy, man, over and over and over again. And now that it's come out on DVD... of course, I have the original DVD and the director's cut, which I'm not crazy about. I was hoping the director's cut was going to have deleted scenes, like most director's cuts. Here's some footage we haven't seen, but instead they went to those comic book
panel
things.
Tried to make it
like
a comic book and everything.
Which you watch the interviews with the director, he said that's the way he envisioned the movie as a comic book yeah. movie.
And if you watch it now, there are still some kind of side dissolves and.
Oh yeah,
it kind of
works
that
way.
To it.
It works that way. I just don't.
But they substitute some
yeah.
iconic like when the
they cut some real footage out to put those cowboy.
Yeah, when the Warriors come from the subway and they first see the Baseball Furies.
Yeah,
and with Ajax, like, oh shit.
Yeah,
that's a great moment. But in the director's cut, that's an illustrated panel when it totally derails the momentum of the scene.
Yeah, so that was a misstep, in our opinion.
Oh yeah, and I had sold my original copy when the directors came out. And then I scrambled to go to all the used DVD stores, so I found an original copy of the film just left alone.
Right on.
So that's why, to this day, that's why I'm hesitant to get rid of my original stuff when the director's cut comes out, so after I watch it, because I'm not sure if we're going to, you know, fat finger it or mess it up or something.
Now, I'll tell you something I have. There was no merchandising for this movie, because merchandising wasn't a big thing back then. You know, but I do have the vinyl, the soundtrack album.
Oh, cool.
Which is beautiful because it's the movie poster, you know. I might have to frame that album, I think. The only other thing that came out at the time, really, was the novel. And I remember it's a black cover and it has a little picture of Swan and Ajax, a couple of the Warriors on it with the logo. And, of course, the one sheet, if you can find that anywhere. Other than that, it wasn't until the 90s. Mid-late 90s, I want to say Mezco, maybe, came out with some action figures of the Warriors. Kind of like real stylized, almost animated-looking figures. Kind of cool-looking. They came out with just three or four of the Warriors, and then they came out, I think, with Solly, with Luther from the Rogues, and about three or four different Baseball Furies. Now, I've got two of those figures somewhere, which I'm going to have to dig out, but I have them, you know, packed in a box with a lot of those stuff. I just don't have room to put out. But I went looking recently on eBay just to see online, and they're not cheap now. You're lucky to touch one for, you know, under $50. But that's about it, I think. I'm not counting fan produced material. You know, you can get the vest. There's some couple places that make the vest, and they're not cheap either.
I actually saw there's a at that T-shirt store we always go to.
Mm-hmm.
There's a T-shirt of a shirtless torso with the vest.
They have that there?
Yes.
I didn't see that.
Yes, they have it there. Of course, it's like kind of big. And
yeah.
But it's looks like you're just wearing the vest over a shirtless torso.
You mean the T-shirt shop used to be at the beach?
Yes.
Next time you're in town, we're going back there.
Fair enough.
and there's a lot of cool T-shirts out now, too.
Mm-hmm.
But getting back, I was talking about the soundtrack album. We got to talk about the music, because that's another character in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Basically, that really sets the mood. I mean, from the get-go, it feels like the subway is moving, you know? You know, the music, the way it builds, that slow build, and then it just has like something's happening, something's moving.
It's got that crunchy 70s feel to it.
Dun, 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 you know? And it really, it gets the energy of the movie going. And then the other stings, like when the Baseball Furies show up, and it's just that long doo-doo notes, mm-hmm. and you're like, oh, okay, something bad's getting ready to happen to these guys, you know.
Yeah.
And there's the DJ's playing some songs,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the background, and like Nowhere to Run, Nowhere to Hide, right at the beginning. That's really cool. But, I mean, the one of the best ones is the end song, Joe Walsh, In the City, which was written for that movie.
Yeah.
It was written for the Warriors, and then later on, the Eagles recorded it. And Joe Walsh, you know, record, I think, again, one of his greatest hits albums. But that's, you know, it's just a great
And there's also
great
the
song. That's that kind of
where you get that kind of transition, though, is you get the Fear song, Living in the City.
Oh, uh-huh.
And that's a punk song.
Mm.
Lead singer of Fear was Lee Ving, who played Mr. Body and Clue.
That's right, yeah.
And that's the song In the Game.
Uh-huh.
That's playing during the Turnbull AC.
Oh,
play.
Okay.
So that's the play there with the kind of punk attitude that they had.
Well, there you go.
So that song came from the Warriors, too.
Yeah. I mean, music's a big part of any movie, really, that's, you know, worth a damn. But it's really like another member of the team in this one.
It is.
You know?
It really is, yeah. Yeah. And you can take the main theme from the Warriors, throw it on your headset, and that's a good workout song.
Oh, yeah.
I use that to work out, too.
Yeah, it
you
is.
You feel
it's
like
good.
You're getting to bop your way up to the Bronx for the big meet. You know, you got to be in shape in case you got to, you know, waste some heads on the way.
Got to bop our way all the way back
that's
to Coney.
Right.
Man, the big CI. Yeah, I would love to see that come out in the theater again, just for like a, you know, one of these Fathom events or,
Oh, yeah.
Another, a late show at the Narrow again. Just
oh, it'd be so good.
That'd be awesome.
So good. And it would be... I'm not sure how it would go over, though.
Yeah.
But, you know, you'd have, you know, fans like us who maybe have never seen it on the big screen.
Yeah.
Or casual fans who know the one or two, who know the Bottles yeah. and the Warriors come out to play, who have never experienced it and don't know anything else about it.
Oh, yeah. Well, you probably get people, too, who saw it when it originally came out. And, you yeah. know, it's like, man, you know, because when we showed it at Phantasmo some years ago, it was one of the first or second year we were doing Phantasmo. We showed the Warriors and I think Escape from New York. We yeah. did New York Night. And we had this guy. This was awesome. This old guy, long gray beard, gray hair, kind of balding, but gray hair, come in one leg on crutches. And he comes in and he said, man, when I was a kid, I was in gangs, in a couple gangs in New York. I had to come here and see this movie, man. I love this movie. I wish I would have talked to him. Now, more than that, I bet he would have been fascinating as hell to talk to. But he was there during this time, man. This was like his mm-hmm. movie. And so I'm sure we'd get more people like that.
Yeah.
You know, if it'll play again, you know, who knows? Maybe I can get him to show it sometime. That would be awesome. Keep using that word to describe this movie, but it just is. It's an awesome film.
It fits.
Yeah.
It really fits.
It's so much fun. And, you know, like a lot of good stories, it comes from an age-old story that's just repeated, you know, yeah. that Greek tale of the...
Trying to, you know...
The warriors.
trying to bop their way back to Greece. But then, of course, you know, if you look at it, there's yeah. some moments in this film that are just little brilliant storytelling. It's not a stupid movie.
No.
It's that one where they're getting on the subway and the kids are coming home from prom.
Oh, yeah.
And they're all dressed up and uh-huh. they're sitting there looking fancy. And the Warriors have already been through hell at this
Oh, yeah.
point.
They're beat to damn death.
They're separated and they're mm-hmm. beat up and they're dirty and they're torn and they're bloody. And these kids are coming from prom in their tuxes and everything. And
they're clean and one of the greatest nights of their lives. Yeah.
And Mercy reaches up to kind of start fixing her hair and Swan stops.
Yeah.
And he puts her hand down kind of, you know, you don't owe those people anything.
Yeah. You don't be ashamed of who you
that's
are.
That's not a stupid moment.
No. It's a nice little character bit.
At the end, spoilers, when they get back to Coney,
yeah.
you know, she says, you know, I always like traveling, and he says, you know, something like, where you been? She goes, I've never been nowhere, but I'm sure I'd like it.
Yeah.
That there's a lot in that sentence.
Yeah.
It's not a stupid, mindless, you know, just fight after fight after fight action movie.
No, you get
a snapshot of who these people are.
Well, there's a whole scene of them in the subway tunnel where they have that almost love scene where they kiss.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way that shot, man, with the other train on the other track. And, you know, the lights flickering through on them, and
yeah.
there's exchange, their dialogue exchange. It's really a cool scene. It's a good scene for their two characters, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, Swan, he's kind of fallen for a little bit, and he wants to kiss and keep going, but it's like, nah, he's got stuff to do, man. He's got to get back to his guys.
Yeah.
Got to make sure everybody's safe and get going, you know. So it's a neat little bit right there. There's a lot of cool little scenes throughout the movie, like that, little character pieces that kind of tells a little bit about who they are. The characters don't really get fleshed out, but you do get a sense of who they are.
Yeah, they're not just interchangeable faces.
No.
You can tell kind of, you know, who each one is through their little moments.
Yeah, without that intro that was originally filmed.
Yeah.
Spoon feeding it to you.
Exactly.
Yeah, I love the beginning. The beginning is just, you know, it's flashing back the different gang, like we were talking earlier, the different gangs and the Warriors talking to each other, the music and
yeah.
the subway moving. You're like,
yeah,
it really gives you a sense something's getting ready to happen.
And you get the vibe though of the scenes where they're just kind of messing around the subway and they take Cowboy's hat or they're just talking. It looks natural. Those guys have chemistry together.
Oh yeah,
you can
yeah.
believe that. You know,
they've known each other
friends.
For a long yeah. time. Yeah.
You can believe they're a bunch of friends getting ready to go somewhere.
Yeah, you really do. You do get a sense that these guys have known each other a long time, and they're friends, and they, you know, they've got each other's back and all that. It really does. It comes across in just a short amount of time. And, you know, hey, you know, it's a testament to the guys and the director, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the last scene where they're walking along the beach, and they're walking, like, into the sunset, basically. They're walking off in the distance away from the camera. Camera can't hear them. Camera can barely see him, you know, but the director told him, stay in character. Just keep walking until I yell cut. Stay in character the whole time. And they did until they got like over a dune out of the way. And Van Valkenburg, she said that, you know, they did until they got over this dune and they couldn't see anymore. And when they came back, when they came walking back down the road, the director and producer had a dozen roses for her.
That's cool.
So, yeah, it's, you know, they all kind of really got along and thought a lot of each other. Oh, there's another interesting bit. Going back to what we were talking about earlier about real gangs giving them trouble. When they were filming on one of the platforms, there was a little deli or something down across the street they would eat at. And they were told that when the guys came down, they should take the colors off. Because the other gang, you know, might jump them or be pissed and, you know, cause trouble. So they did. You know, they had to take off their wardrobe and put on another shirt or something just to go across the street to eat. Yeah, the gangs weren't playing, you know.
I mean, you know, it was the late 70s in New York. You know, you also got to remember the same era that gave us Death Wish and Dirty Harry and...
Yeah, and New York was a rough, grimy place.
Oh, yeah.
And it still is rough in some areas, but not like it was. I mean,
it's nowhere near. I mean, when you're talking about, like, the age of the grindhouse in 42nd Street, that's where it came from.
It came
from there.
Yeah.
You know what, hookers and pimps and, you know, drug addicts and people getting...
And that area now is like a tourist mecca.
There.
Yeah. Where before, you know, you probably wouldn't go down there alone.
No.
No. Man, what else is there? The music is just awesome. And
the cinematography, the story, it's one of those movies. If you were telling somebody about it, you said it's a street gang that gets into trouble and they have to fight their way back home.
Basically,
and it sounds simple.
Basically, that's the plot.
But there's so much going on. It's so much more than that.
Yeah.
You just have to see it.
Yeah.
And if you've seen it, you have to see it again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, like you said earlier, you know, where it's adapted from old Greek legend or tale, and it's adapted to a 70s sensibility or 70s time frame with the street gangs, that adds a lot more weight to it than just it's a street gang fighting their way back.
Yeah.
You know, that is like, okay, what else is there? But you can't really tell that to just anybody, or when you're telling the plot, tell them that, because some people just won't make any sense with. But you do have to see it to get the weight of it. And it's not a heavy drama by any means, but it's a fun, good action movie, but it's more going on in it than just action and fun.
And something I just thought about, which is, I'm not sure if this was intentional or if it's just Cyrus is trying to get all the gangs together. He says, you know, there's 100,000 of us. There's only 60,000 cops or 20,000 cops. You know, we can run the rackets. We can run the crime families. All we got to do is work together, da, da, da. Except for a few little places on their way home, though.
Uh-huh.
They don't run into the cops.
No.
There's two or three little altercations, but most of it is other gangs.
Oh, yeah.
And that kind of builds towards what they were saying of, A, how much danger they're really in, because if, you know, the cops caught them and arrested them, it's movie over, they're in jail.
Yeah, yeah.
Anticlimactic.
They get arrested, that's it.
You feel the danger that they're in, but you also kind of get a feel of how lawless New York was, because there were no cops around, there was no help, you had to do stuff on your own.
Which
kind of adds to that tension of it,
too. Well, also, too, it gives you the sense of, like he said, there's 20,000 cops, 100,000 gang members.
Exactly.
Well, you see more gang members than you do cops. And, you know, that they knew the street. Cyrus says, the streets are ours. We own the streets, or whatever he says. The way that they know how to get around to stay away from the cops.
Yeah.
To not see any cops, because they know the streets, you know. It really gives you that sense of that, too, without thinking about it.
So there's a lot more storytelling that goes on subtly.
Yeah.
And this was made when movies didn't feel they had to spoon feed you everything.
Oh, yeah.
Or
yeah.
They trusted their audience enough to be able to follow the story or to pull out subtle things without having to beat them over the head with it.
Yeah. And you got old professional guys working on it, like Andrew Laszlo, the cinematographer, who worked in film forever and knew film.
You actually had film. Storytellers making these movies.
Yeah. And it's, like you said, as simple as a plot as it is, just saying what it is, you really got to see it to feel it. And you're either going to love it to death or you're going to go, eh, it was okay. If you go, eh, it's okay, we can't be friends.
No. No. You really can't.
Yeah.
And the thing is when you first see these gangs, yellow satin jackets and mimes and, you know, the pimp gang and this and that and the other, and even the baseball furies.
Yeah.
You know, they're wearing baseball outfits with basically Kiss face paint on.
Yeah.
But at no time do you think, like, if the Warriors ran into the hi-hats, you legitimately feel like, you know, oh, crap.
Yeah.
You don't discount any of these gangs, as silly or as goofy as they may look. You don't doubt that any one of them can handle their business, though.
No, we almost get a sense of, because of, you know, their gangs, and you see the fights and stuff, that the other gangs, like the ones that might have looked goofy, that, you know, that was their distraction.
Yeah.
You know?
Or they had to be that tough to get away with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the big bathroom fight we're talking about.
Oh, yeah.
It's a bunch of guys in rugby...
like hillbillies.
Rugby shirts with overalls.
Coveralls. And one of them was on roller skates. Yeah, one of them's on roller skates, yeah.
And roller skates. Nowadays, you'd laugh someone out of the theater if that was your main bad guy.
Yeah.
But back then, that was a hell of a fight. Those guys
it was a beautiful. It was a beautiful fight scene, too.
Guys rolled rough.
Yeah, it was filmed incredibly well. Mm-hmm. In fact, it is one of the... somewhere, like, one of the top 10 cinematic fight scenes listed. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was IFC, something like that, listed that
and
as...
And it took, what, like a week to shoot or something?
Oh, yeah.
And all this time and money to shoot it. And it's on the screen. It doesn't ever look silly.
Oh, yeah. And you see everything that happens, too.
Yeah.
There's no close-ups and quick cuts where you don't know, like... Oh, God, that annoys me the hell out of me. A lot of guys working in film today, directors, whatever, cinematographers, have no clue how to shoot a fight scene. And... The Warriors should be a textbook, a learning textbook on how to shoot a fight scene, because you see everything that's going on. There are a couple of close-ups, you know, just for dramatic emphasis, but for the most part, the camera is back. You see the action. There's no quick cuts, you know.
But also,
no jerky camera moves.
But also, what I find interesting is during each fight, you can see the personality of the gang in their fighting style.
Oh yeah.
You got the roller skate gang using the skates to their advantage and for intimidation, and you have the Furies moving like samurais, and then you have, you know, the Orphans being really ineffective, but there's like 100 of them, but they still don't manage to do anything. So even the fight scenes build the character of each individual gang.
Yeah, it does.
And
it
if they were shooting like they were today, you wouldn't have any of that.
No.
All these gangs would either look like super badasses or super goofballs because the Warriors are folding them all up.
Yeah.
But you get to see how each gang kind of is personality-wise by how they fight.
Yeah. And in a few of the fight scenes, especially the bathroom scene, there's a like one or two little like quick slow motion shots. Mm-hmm. And it's not overdone. You know, it's not every scene. It's just for a little emphasis in a couple of moves. And it's not that, it's real slow motion too. It's not that bullet time slow motion that everybody does in everything now that's annoying as shit. You know? It was cool in The Matrix a couple of times. And then the first couple of times you saw it in another movie after that, I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. But now that everybody uses it all the time, it's boring as hell. Yeah. That's all I got to say about that. Check out if you like just good action fight scenes, man. That bathroom fight is the if you watch any of them in the movie, that's the one to watch. Man, yeah, I don't think I have anything else really to say. I can't think of anything.
I don't think there's anything really to say.
I can just sit here and gush about it over and over and over again and repeat myself, but do yourself a favor. Watch the movie. Seek it out. It's not hard to find. It was on Netflix for a while. Might be on some streaming services. Find the DVD. It's a incredibly entertaining movie, and that's about all I got to say. That's all I got to say about that. Hey, if you enjoyed this podcast, if you like what we talk about, if you want to hear us talk about something else, drop us a line at phantasmoad@gmail.com. That's phantasmode@gmail.com, or just shoot us a line on the Facebook page. You know, I'd love to hear from you. Love to know what you think. Tell us to shut the hell up if you don't like it, or. If you want to hear us talk about something else, you have any ideas, or you just want to comment on what we talked about, you got some, you know, maybe we left something out, something we forgot. I'd love to hear stuff like that. You know, definitely drop us a line, won't you? Before we go, you got to help me on this. We started a new segment at the end of each podcast, and it's Phyllis in her infinite wisdom has me doing this now, which I, you know, it's great. This is a kind of a thing that Clayton and I started many, many years ago before 7 Degrees of Kevin Bacon. We discovered that the world revolves around Planet of the Apes, and it's true, and I can prove it. So at the end of each podcast now, we're going to do World Revolves Around Planet of the Apes. So what it is the co-host, being you, come up with, just shoot me an actor, a movie, anything pop culture like that, and I will connect it back to Planet of the Apes in as, you know, few steps as I can. So give me somebody.
Irwin Keyes.
Irwin Keyes.
Yes.
Okay. Irwin Keyes was in House of the Corpses. Michael J. Pollard talks about the guy sticking the Planet of the Apes figure up his butt.
Okay, there you go. Fair enough. Fair enough.
That's stretching it. I'll go actor to actor. Okay, Irwin Keyes. So I got to go House of a Thousand Corpses. Okay, Michael J. Pollard. Michael J. Pollard was on an episode of Star Trek called Miri with Kim Darby. Star Trek goes, you got Sarak. Mark Leonard, who plays Sarak, was Urko on the Planet of the Apes TV show. There you go.
You know, you could have just made all that out because I don't know anything about Planet of the Apes. So
look
well
it up,
done.
Google it. It's true. If you can get to Star Trek or you can get to the Batman 66 show, direct line to Planet of the Apes. But there you go. So that's this week's podcast, everybody. Thanks for listening and thanks for joining me again, Craig. Always a blast. And
always fun being here. I always like doing it. And I'll see you next time, boppers.
That's right. Good night, everybody.